back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Open up your heart, what do you feel? Open up your heart, what do you feel? It's real, yeah. The Big Bang may be a million years away, oh. But I can't figure out a better time to say,
we're back at the races. About 10 minutes into hour two. And for those of you that have been holding on since last week for an update, we foreshadowed, knew that Joe Fernando was playing some post-college ball while trying to expand the opportunity and continue on. And boy, the suggestion that we were going to get an update could not be more exciting for Joe and for Sid. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I got a text message yesterday from one of your listeners, Mets scout John Kosiak, and he said, well, Steve just mentioned yesterday that he's got some big news, and he said, I can't wait. Can you tell me?
That's great.
Yeah.
Go at it. Tell everybody what's transpired.
Well, first off, I want to thank so many of your listeners for, you know, we come on here to talk about pedigree, but eventually life gets into the radio stream and we discuss other stuff too. And of course, through the years, I've mentioned, and you have too, my son playing baseball, and he graduated last year from Bethune-Cookman, a D1 program. And you know, he had a great season, led the team, was all first team all conference team MVP, all that. And you know, we were pretty confident he was going to get drafted because the Mets area scout in Florida, John Updike, really, you know, wanted Joe. He came to Joe's house, apartment, the day after the season ended. As in life, though, you know, Mets changed their drafting strategy right on draft day. He didn't get taken. As you can imagine, you know, it was a big blow. It was disappointing, and you know, this transcends baseball. It's true for racing, life. You know, Joe didn't throw in the towel. He just moved to West Palm and started training, worked at night, and you know, look for an opportunity. Very fortunately, the San Diego Padres area scout down in Florida, John Martin, great guy. He's the guy who signed Manny Machado. He'd seen Joe, asked Joe for to come for a private workout, which Joe did well. And then he said, "Listen, I'm going to invite you back in February for a workout I have for, like, you know, like 20 serious prospects." And the GM for the Padres, the scouting director, they all flew in to watch the workout. Joe had a great workout, and we just heard last week, Steve, Friday, John Martin called him up and said, "Are you ready to report to spring training in Phoenix?" And, you know, Monday, the contract came, he signed, and he's officially a shortstop with the San Diego Padres. We'll be, you know, going to minor league spring training March 8th. And, you know, it was just such a great feeling. And first off, I want to thank, you know, so many people have not only shown support and interest, but even guys like you, your listeners might not know, after the draft last year, you put his name out to a few guys that you knew at some teams, and the support and, yeah, the help has been really something else. And, you know, I'd like to thank everybody for listening, for, you know, if you've done something, if you've put his name out there, and just for the well wishes. It's really been such a great show of humanity, too. So, you know, he and I, my wife, Cynthia, we all appreciate it.
It's incredibly exciting, and really, it feels like, you know, feels like the Pods is a nice fit too.
Yeah, it really is. And the Padres happen to have the number one farm system in the country.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, that in itself is really, it's hard. It's like, you know, you're applying to a school, but the higher the level, the tougher the competition. So the fact that, you know, he was able to get into that is pretty significant too. So, you know, he's got to go to Mark, you know, he's got to go to spring training and try to earn a great spot on the team. But, you know, the first step is there. So that's what we're just enjoying day by day right now.
He's how old?
He turned 23 at the end of October. So, you know, he's right on schedule. Like, had he been drafted, you know, he would have gone short season A last year, which means that, this year he'd be in that exact stage where he'd have to be. So, fingers crossed.
Well, I think I got it right with Lake Elsinore, right? That would be about Lake Elsinore or I don't know if they're still in, if their double A team is still San Antonio, but he's got to fit right in. You would think he'd waltz right into that.
Well, yeah, I don't, you know, I think the way the levels are, it's rookie, short A, low A, high A, double A, triple A. So, you know, hopefully at this point, I think his hope is to get to where the stage he'd be right now if he'd been drafted last year, which would be in low A. So, he's going to try to fight for a spot on that team and take it from there.
Well, the Midwest, in fact, here it is. The Midwest affiliate is Fort Wayne.
That's right.
So you can listen in on WOWO. I'll tell you right now, which is one of the old 100,000 watt superstations. You can hear on certain nights. You can hear WOWO from Fort Wayne all over the. Yeah, you may need a transmitter on top of the roof, but of the apartment. But Lake Elsinore in the California League, and they're actually Amarillo. Now they left San Antonio. They're in Amarillo for the Texas League and El Paso in the Pacific Coast League. So we'll be talking to you on the road. I got a feeling.
I hope not to be. You know, during his college seasons, I go and spend the entire spring watching the games. But there are way too many games now. But you know, the real inspirational part of this thing is. What people don't understand is, you know, if you miss the draft, and first off, just to be drafted is such an honor, and it's such a small number of guys. You know, you get, you know, 1,000, 1,200 guys getting drafted out of all these guys in D1 programs that have, you know, 35 guys on a team, 300 teams, and then only 1,200 guys get drafted. And the reality is, if you don't get drafted, it's like a zillion to one to even be able to get hooked up again at this time of year, you know? And so, I mean, this was such a, you know, long shot thing that happened. And, you know, I really appreciate John Martin, the area scout there, because, you know, he liked Joe, he saw Joe, and you know, he actually told Joe after he signed him, he goes, man, I just wished I had seen you while you were playing in the spring, because we would have had this thing done a lot earlier. But you know what? It's better late than never. And so appreciative of him and, you know, the Padres general manager who came down and the scouting director and, you know,
wow.
Joe spoke to both those guys at that workout. And actually, I've got to tie this into racing. I referenced this the last time I was on here, but a shout out to Barkley Tag, because some of your listeners might have remembered that I said about 5 days before this workout, Joe was training so hard he actually tweaked a muscle in his leg, and it was like, oh my God, you know, on the eve of this workout. This happened 5 days out, and Barkley gave him some liniment. He drove out, because Barkley's at Boynton Beach at Palm Meadows, and he's at West Palm, so he drove out. I called up Barkley. Barkley said, yeah, have him meet me at the stable gates. Joe drove out, and Barkley gave him some horse liniment.
That's
just
so
to put
great.
On the leg. Remember I referenced that?
Yeah. It's tremendous.
That really helped. That's why Barkley's the master.
That's so funny, and so he's getting the same. He's getting the same support that Tiz the Law is getting.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Keep those tendons nice and warm.
Oh my God, that's funny. It's wonderful, and wish him the best of luck. And obviously, we'll talk to you. Yeah, you're going to go out for spring training and watch. Now you'll.
Yeah,
gotta
I'm going to fly out with him for spring training just to get him set up there and watch. But, you know, I've done this. I've gone wherever when he was in Deerfield Academy, which, you know, his route here has been really something, because he was in a big prep school in Massachusetts, Deerfield Academy, where I watched him. I used to go up to Amherst to watch him play. Deerfield, then went from a elite prep school to Oklahoma, northeastern Oklahoma, a JUCO in Miami, Oklahoma, where he played for 2 years. So
that's right.
Still watching him. That, of course, that gave me a great excuse to ride my bike out there. From there, he goes to Bethune-Cookman in Daytona Beach, Florida. So, you know, I've been crisscrossing the country. College seasons, of course, you know, 55 games. So this is going to be a lot longer season. So, you know, I'm going to catch some games, but I'm not going to be able to do everything. But I'm glad you told me about that radio station.
Well, he's got... He seems to have everything that it takes, which is the raw talent and the discipline and the love and support, and then a certain special drive. Sid,
thank you. I appreciate that. Steve.
That he carries with him. That he's gonna make it to the highest level. It seems destined.
Yeah, that's what we're looking forward to. But thank you.
Turn our attention to the same kinds of prospects, and so many times we've made these same analogies about the progress of young equine athletes to that of professional sports athletes, and this is our major league season of tryouts, and a very interesting set of developments, certainly, Sid, between Nadal's second start winning the San Vicente. And then, I don't know if you had a chance to hear Patrick yesterday, but Patrick was unbelievable, I thought. We had a wonderful visit with Pat Biancone, and here he is having bought one inexpensive horse domestically, one, mm-hmm. you know, one, one medium priced $250,000 type at Arcana, and he's moving them interchangeably on turf and dirt. They've got fascinating pedigrees, both of them do, including one Flaxman product who is gelded. So, you know, there's no demands toward building a stallion resume, but let's talk about what went on with Sol Volante and a little bit with Ete Indien last week. And in the hands of Patrick, got to be respected, and then we'll swing around to Nadal.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. We talk at this point about horses, and we speculate about their pedigrees and how their pedigrees might work in their favor to handle 10 furlongs or a mile and 3/16 to the Preakness or 12 furlongs of the Belmont. And if there's ever a horse right now on the horizon that has that type of pedigree, it's this gelding, as you pointed out, Sol Volante. The big question mark was that it's such a turf pedigree. We've always mentioned here that, you know, turf is almost synonymous with stamina. He fits this profile, Steve, that we've also been talking about, of that first crop horse and how those first crop stallions tend to get such great mares, particularly if the owner is vested in that stallion. And in this case, the stallion is Calaconte, who was a turf horse, obviously, a miler, Flaxman Holdings, happens to be a Japanese bred too. He's out of a Sunday Silence mare. He's from a fabulous family, just to begin with, because he is from the immediate family of Niesk and King Mambo. So this horse went to stud at Gainesway, where a lot of Flaxman stallions have gone to stud in the past. And a turf miler, this particular gelding, Sol Volante, was bred by Flaxman. And if you look at his pedigree, it's just fabulous. First off, the dam is by King Mambo, so you've got that inbreeding to Miesk in his family, which is number one, which is something that you knew was going to happen with Flaxman. But the big part of this pedigree, Steve, is that the dam had already produced a stakes winner, the Grade 3 Canadian Derby winner, Explode by Trap Shop. It's also a stakes place, a runner by Kitten's Joy. More importantly, Dam, as we mentioned, is by King Mambo, which is stamina. Then you have the second dam, Lingerie, is by Shirley Heights. That's even more stamina. The third dam is Northern Trick by Northern Dancer. She was a horse of the year in France, a champion 3-year-old, won the French Oaks. It's a lot of incredible turf stamina in here, and there's recognizable current names as well. Under the second dam, Steve, is Main Sequence, who was a champion grass horse here in this country. Gelding, who Flaxman had sent over to this country to run. Of course, you know, he was a great mile and a half horse here. But even some European horses, Cloth of Stars is in his family. This is a horse that was high rated on the French Free Handicap between 11 to 14 furlongs. You know, you've got such a really quality type of Flaxman, European, 12 furlong types in his family that the pedigree was set up for that. Now, you look at the way he ran in that race. I mean, he beat a very good horse in Independence Hall. And he, more importantly, acted on dirt, which now has taken the only equation that we were waiting for out of the question. That is the turf miler from a really turf stamina family. We've had the dirt performance. And this is a horse, I think, Steve, that especially when you look at the way he ran, the horse he beat, there were lengths ahead of everybody else. And this pedigree, it's a pedigree that's going to keep developing. It's based on continued development at three. And there's a lot to this horse that I really like. And in fact, I'm going to do a column in the TDN this week, and he's one of the horses that will be included in this column. Now, when I came on here, I had really just studied him and not the other Biancone horse. But this horse is a horse I'm very bullish on. A combination of pedigree and off that performance and who he beat.
There's so much that's exciting about this pedigree that as people dive into it, their heads will explode. You go down, you look down that female, that tail female line, and the name Fast Line it just explodes off the page. Fast Line is about as important a mid-century broodmare in this country as you're going to find. And this thing, this pedigree has got Elmendorf, it's got Newstead, it's got Idlehour. I mean, there is everything we love. Fast Line's most famous son probably is On the Sly, but the dams that came out of Fast Line have just produced a cascade of stake winners.
That's right. I mean, this is really
fun. And then, you know, you bring up the Miesque. Who does the matings at Flaxman? Is there ever, I'm sure if I dig around, there's articles about their breeding practices.
Well, Bill Oppenheim is one of their guys. He's a great guy, a great pedigree guy. And, they have, they've obviously been doing it before Bill. But the Flaxman program and Flaxman Holdings Limited, of course, is the Niarchos family, begun by the patriarch Stavros Niarchos. Stavros Niarchos, by the way, he's the guy who paid $1 million for Nureyev, and Nureyev has been such an important part of their breeding program, and of course he is the sire of their Miesque. And now, of course, the family is controlled by Maria Niarchos, his daughter, and her kids, including Electra Niarchos. So it's a great racing family, and the equine families that they have are built on the families have accumulated through the years. Alan Cooper is their racing manager, and he is probably as responsible as anybody for this operation. They also they keep their a lot of their mares in Kentucky with a small farm under the guidance of Lane Zend and Callan Strauss had set part of it for them there. And they have two women and the yearling manager, Dave, and the two women, Carrie, and I forget her other name, the other one's name right now, but they oversee that office for Flaxman right there on the Lane's End, under the guidance of Lane's End. And you know, it's a big European operation, obviously, one that's had terrific levels of high excellence for years.
It just so happens that I'm writing a thing for, you know, this new Hall of Fame operation, the new interactive I don't even know what to call it, the exhibit, I guess, that's going, yeah. I was asked to write the entry for Mrs. Weber and Live Oak.
Oh,
and so when trying to include, you know, her approach to breeding, mm-hmm. and sales purchase, I got to win approval, and you know, the unique accomplishment that Mrs. Weber has crafted with win approval, and the remarkable output of the mare, including brother Breeders' Cup Mile winners in Mies approval and
that's right.
And world approval. And of course, what was amazing about what she's done with win approval is the somewhat obscure series of stallions that she matched with win approval, including Miesque's son, who
right.
is the sire of Miesque's approval. And Miesque got, you know, Miesque got King Mambo, obviously, but also Kid Alpha, I just saw something about Kid Alpha the other day, and Mingun. And I mean, she, you know, to be a great race mare as she was, and then to turn around and produce what she's produced, I mean, that's a legacy that is, I mean, I can't even think of an adequate contemporary parallel.
Yeah, it's a tremendous legacy, and keep in mind that Flaxman had in France just two seasons ago from the same family the French Derby winner's Study of Man. And Study of Man, again, from the Mies family, but by Deep Impact. Now, this is the global vision of a farm like Flaxman, that not only do they breed here, and of course they had King Mambo at Lane's End, they had a bunch of stallions, obviously, at Gainesway early for Stavros Niarchos, including many, several French Guineas winners. They also were on the cutting edge of one of the first European groups to send horses to Deep Impact in Japan. It's one of the reasons why Caliconte is actually a Japanese bred, because the dam was sent to Japan. And of course, the Caliconte's dam is out of the Sunday Silence mirror, which shows you that they were also one of the first that were going to Sunday Silence while he was in Japan. What's really interesting, and this is where this game becomes so democratized, in the sense that with this huge pedigree, Steve, keep in mind, Sol Volante, from the Lane's End consignment to the 2018 Keeneland September sale, sold for $6,000. Okay, any of us could have bought that horse. And of course, when he was wheeled back to the Pinhook, and Beyond Comb bought him, I believe, for $20,000.
Yep.
So you've got these regal pedigree. You've got obviously, and let's keep in mind that. He's not the only horse of recent vintage that Flaxman has had that has made an impact on dirt in the United States, because just last year, if you recall, and your listeners will recall, and it might not be readily apparent to anybody who just sees it, but War of Will, okay, was Flaxman, Fred.
I forgot that.
Yeah. So these horses that, and of course, War of Will, another one from one of their great families, Best in Show family, but again, Warfront at that time, until Omaha Beach and War of Will kind of reinforced to us what everybody knew but hadn't been shown for a long time, because Warfront was such a powerful presence on turf in Europe, was that, you know, that was another, at that time, we'd say, a really good turf pedigree. And, of course, he won the Preakness. So these turf horses that, you know, kind of reminds me of the time in the 80s when John Gaines, and he's notable because he had so many of these European horses at Gaines Way, but everybody else too, and that includes Spendthrift, Claiborne, obviously, started one of the first to have horses like Sir Ivor and Nijinsky in the most recent years, but of course they were known as the people who had imported horses like Sir Galahad, and before that, and after that, Nazarua from Europe. You know, it's part of what I've been kind of saying to you over, you know, the last 10 years, is that these European imports add to the pedigrees of our horses here. And even when they might not be a immediate impact, they have effects in the internal components of pedigrees. And a horse like Unbridled, for example, such a great American stallion and a dirt stallion, and known for that, of course, the sire of Empire Maker. But if you go, and Empire Maker, I'll carry the example too. But going back to Unbridled, Unbridled is out of a mare by Le Fabuleux. And Le Fabuleux was a French Derby winner that had been imported to stand at Claiborne. You go to his son, Empire Maker, who just died. Of course, she is out of Tussauds by El Gran Señor, European Irish Derby winner, tops on a Northern Dancer. So, you know, you get this benefit when you do cross-pollinate with some of the best European racehorses. It strengthens the breed ultimately here, and it's good to see an example of Caraconte's success right now, and to give him a good colt gelding on the Triple Crown Trail, because that's only going to kind of inspire this type of stuff. And of course, Code of Honor last year, also at Lane's End by Noble Mission, full brother to Frankel, you know, European raced, but a son of Galileo, performing on the dirt. And so, you know, you see stuff like this starting to percolate. Claiborne has Peter Brandt, De Marchelier, son of Dubawi, from a big European family, standing for only $5,000 at Claiborne. It's hopefully beginning of a new era where we're going to be able to have access in this country to top sons of really good international stallions, because that's always good for the breed.
Exactly. And, you know, everybody is always asking and, you know, feeling the need to, you know, seek out stamina and the kind of produce the kind of production that comes with horses that stay, and you know, hardiness, et cetera. And this feels like a timely story for Caraconte, and you know, his performance in that Breeders' Cup from what seemed like an impossible post, and a pedigree that you know, by all rights, should meld with a lot of North American mare lines, I would imagine.
Absolutely, because he is a Stormcat line stallion.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a really good point. And one other thing I do want to mention about Caraconte is that we mentioned this. He's from the family of King Mambo and Miesque, obviously. And, you know, he's a first-crop stallion, but his first group winner in Europe was from bred by the Gunthers, from a Lemon Drop Kid mare. Now, Lemon Drop Kid, of course, was the son of King Mambo. So you've got that same inbreeding there to Miesque. Francis Heron, our bloodstock editor at Work Derby Consultants, did a fabulous piece on Caraconte back in December, and she pointed out another element to it, which obviously Flaxman is fully aware of, which is the great cross with King Mambo and Sunday Silence. So, you know, Caraconte is out of a Sunday Silence mare, as well as being from the family of Miesque, right? So when you put King Mambo to that, a mare by King Mambo, Lemon Drop Kid, who's by King Mambo, what you have then is you have the inbreeding to Miesque, but you also have King Mambo and Sunday Silence together in a pedigree. Now, a lot of people here might not know about that, but one of the great stallions in Japan was King Kamiyamiya, a son of King Mambo, and his great son now, the young son at stud, the heir apparent at Shaddai, is King Kamiyamiya's son, Lord Kanaloa. Now, everybody will know this here because they're big international followers, but the great Japanese filly Amandai, who won in Dubai and who's such a fan favorite, seems like the world over, she's a daughter of Lord Kanaloa, out of a mare by Sunday Silence. So there's that combination showing the success there too, right? King Mambo, Sunday Silence. And so when you're putting together matings, you kind of look for lines that have some success together. And the beauty of this mating of Sol Volante is that not only have Flaxman put together King Mambo so that there's some inbreeding to Miesque and the inbreeding to the family, but they've also put King Mambo on the bottom side of a pedigree that has Sunday Silence on the top, sort of capturing that mojo too, you know what I mean? So it's a really good mating, and it's a fantastic family behind it. And to think, you know, it was only a $6,000 yearling.
Amazing. Well, we'll save. Yeah, we'll do. We'll save Ette Indienne.
We'll go to Nadal because I know we got to get out off by the hour. And since I had kind of looked at him in preparation for you too, I'll speak on his pedigree. And you know, as with Sol Volante, this is another just fabulous pedigree. I mean, you know, this is an old Buckland family. Meteor Stage is the third dam, family of Pateman. But the dam, Ascending Angel, is by Pulpit. You've got Blame and Pulpit, two Claiborne horses right there. Stuff like that's just going to happen. But just, again, Pulpit is the Sire of the Dam. The second dam, Solar Colony, by Pleasant Colony, Buckland, Thomas Nolan Evans. I mean, that's just a stamina marker right there, right? The third dam, and you're going to love this one, is, of course, Meteor Stage by Stage Door Johnny. Mm. So, I mean, Stage Door Johnny is such a severe influence of stamina. And if some of your listeners remembered from our conversation last week, this is the Prince John, Prince Quillo line, where we talked about that inbreeding that you brought up the other day internally. I think the verbatim inbreeding in a horse we were talking about last week. But that Prince John inbreeding, that Prince John blood, that Prince Prince Quillo blood. It's such a such a notable marker for stamina. And Light Sol Volante, this is another horse that's really built for a staying trip, okay? And the fact that he won a 7-furlong race, San Vicente, you know, against a good sprinter and showed that much speed, and he may have not won by much, but realistically, that trip was way too short for him based on what his pedigree is. And this is a pedigree that has some very, very good horses in it. One of them, of course, and I mentioned Main Sequence for Sol Volante, one of them in this pedigree is Marshside, who, you know, won the Canadian International, a real mile-and-a-half horse. It just shows you that the severe stamina that's in here in his family, deep into it. And there's just a lot of class, a lot of stakes horses in his family, going back to a lot of black type. And this is another horse that you've got to like on that female side, that has that stamina that's really in abundance for the classics. And he's shown through his racing performance that he has the speed, too, because what you need is that combination of speed and stamina. And I think, you know, again, this is another very, very good prospect. And, of course, as opposed to the 20,000 two-year-old that Sol Volante was, this is a $700,000 two-year-old.
There's one name that shows up in both of the pedigrees that we've discussed, and in almost about the same spot, and that's Prince John. When you mentioned Stage Door Johnny,
yep, that's right. That's always such a marker. That is such a marker. Of course, Northern Dancer shows up in both of them. The correct me if I'm wrong, but the sire of each of the third dams is Northern Dancer, isn't it? Northern Meteor for Nadal by Northern Dancer, and Northern Trick for Sol Volante by Northern Dancer.
That's right. That's right. Because that's right. Prince John got Trick Chick with Fastline. And then Trick Chick and Northern Dancer produced Northern Trick.
That's right.
So the tail female line is very, very similar. Nadal, I know people, Sid, are making, you know, kind of an assumption that he wasn't as brilliant in that spot on Sunday as they might hope or expect. But I thought there was some very telling comments from Baffert about the performance. And first of all, just the fact that he ran him in this race was it was a surprise.
That's exactly right. He put him in a much quicker turnaround than he normally would have wanted. And, you know, just throw him right into, you know, a race that had some good horses, including the champion two-year-old.
And he, you know, we were with him on Monday, you know, shortly after Nadal had worked. And then that he, you know, 48 hours later, puts him in this spot. And then the comment that he said, well, I think we're going to the Rebel. And this was the work that I was looking for. He didn't even judge this race as a stake opportunity. He was looking at it. It's unbelievable. He was looking. He said, it's as if he came out of the work on Monday and said, all right, I'll work him again Saturday or Sunday, 7 days, 6 days later. I'll work him 7/8 in a race.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this was. He worked him in a pace spot and now is where he wants the horse to be to make the next step. If those of you who have who have, you know, gone, you know, out of the jury room and made your decision, you better wait until the rebel. Because this may be a very different horse in 5 weeks or whatever it is, 4 weeks than he is now. Is it too much
too
soon?
That's a really good point.
Yeah, it might be too much.
That's a really good point.
That he's a work in progress.
And keep in mind, it was only his second start.
Yeah, I said that during the whatchamacallit show, during the NHC show, the guys were like, "Eh, that was okay." It's his second start. You're being a little harsh.
And like I said, you take that second start, and keep in mind that the pedigree is such, you know, it's a stamina built pedigree, and this horse is showing a lot of speed here. You know, I think that stamina sort of kicks in, that those elements kick in when they don't have to show that speed so much so early, you know? I mean, that's where you get a lift. Once he starts getting a further distance, he's got this stuff built into him, you know? So that's something to look forward to. Now, you take a look at a pedigree stand, and you see a real speed pedigree in, and you see the performance, and you say, well, okay, you know, this horse just about ran to his pedigree. There's a lot more in the tank in here, not only from what Bassett knows, but genetically, and I mean, pedigree-wise, and what, you know, what's built around him. And, of course, Blame, let's face it, he turned into a really excellent stallion. And he was a stallion that had dropped in fee all the way down to 12,500 a few years ago. And 2 years ago, and you know, he's back up to 30 now, or 35, whatever it is now. So this is a stallion that won at a mile and a quarter, a stallion from a line that this is a line of Epsom Derby winner Roberto. I'm getting back to those examples of horses that raced in Europe at a mile and a half and came back here and had a success at stud. Of course, Roberto, Derby Dan Holmberg for John Galbraith, returned home to Derby Dan. So, you know, there's a lot here in this pedigree. Both these horses, hidden talent in those female lines, hidden talent. Well, it's not hidden. I mean, anybody pulls a pedigree, they see it. But, you know, the strength of female family, I think, is a big takeaway from both these colts.
Now, this would be, and from that standpoint, as you were alluding, this would be a very big boost to Blame. I mean, I think he,
yes,
you know, he's plenty of respect and appreciation for crafting progeny that require patience and you know, adroit handling toward, you know, toward long-term success. But if he gets a classic colt, that's the spurs that he kind of needs. That would be a very, very important, you know, and this is what crop is this for him?
I can't remember off the top of my head, Steve, but what you're talking about here just reminded me of part of our conversation for last week about how stallions get penalized when they don't produce right away, and a lot of times they get sent abroad, right, or sold or moved to the provinces. But here's Claiborne, though, stuck with his horse, and I still remember when Bernie Sams told me they were struggling with Blame. That was the year that they had to drop his fee. This, you know, I can't remember what year that was, 2 years ago, but Seth, they were in a meeting, and Seth Hancock told Bernie, what do we got to do to get more mares to this horse? Because they were not giving up on this horse, okay? And Bernie said, we got to cut his fee in half. We got to drop his fee all the way down. And that's what Claiborne did, just to keep this horse viable. And that year that they dropped him, it wasn't last year, but it was the year before that they dropped him to 12.5, he had a big year. Big year. So, you know, sometimes you've got to weather the storm, and it's easier said than done when you own the horse and have a close-knit syndicate When you have a lot of shareholders in a syndicate and things start to go bad, it's easy enough to say, let's take the money and sell. But to Claiborne's credit, Seth Hancock, Walker Hancock, Bernie Sands, and their team, you know, it's a benefit to the United States breeding industry. These horses persevered with, and now, you know, here's a legit classic prospect, as you point out, and if what he does could really take Blaine's game to another level.
There's also a John Nayrud wheelhouse maxim involved here. You don't judge a stallion until they've had seven crops. This is
his seventh crop. Yeah.
His 2 year olds were in 2014. He entered stud in 2011.
Yeah.
Seventh crop. And so he's 14, and he himself is 14 now. And so, you know, perhaps the best 5 years of his career are on the horizon.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
And he's such a nicely built horse too. He's really got that sort of that square European, I don't know, that in between. I see the square from across from shoulder to hip and then down and he's got all those angles that guys tell you about and teach you about.
And by the way, this colt was bred by Sierra Farm in Kentucky. And he was a $65,000 yearling at the same Keeneland September sale in which Sol Volante was a $6,000. Randy Bradshaw pinhooked his colt from $65,000 to $700,000. So that was a big score for Randy Bradshaw. But again, as a yearling, $65,000. The other one, $6,000. I haven't seen either one, but from, you know, to speculate that they made such little money with these types of pedigrees behind them, and this is pure speculation, I was just saying it because I've seen this with a lot of horses through the years, is that these are the type of yearlings, unless there was something major, flaw, these are the type of yearlings, a lot of your classic type of horses, especially ones that really have stamina built into them. They don't show well as yearlings. They may, and I know that Nadal is a big horse. He may have been a big yearling, but it's, not filled in and didn't have that type of kind of rounded musculature that yearling buyers look for physically at that time as yearlings. You know, this might have been a colt that just really was a later developer that filled into that frame, and now he's magnificent from what I saw on a video. That very well could be the case.
He looks like Blame.
Probably.
Yeah, he really does.
I did see that he was a big horse, though.
Yeah, he is. He's a big boy. There's no doubt. He's got girth, and no, there's substance everywhere you look.
Yeah, exactly. That's the type of horse Baxford likes too.
Well, Jesus, it's unbelievable, I was impressed. I thought the way he won was fine by me. But then when I saw those quotes afterward from Baffert, when I saw the notes, the Santa Anita notes and Jay Pribman's piece, that's when I said, oh, boy, this is now you can first start getting concerned about what you're dealing with here. So time, you think about so many horses that, will have tried this, and the one that was unfortunate, that seemed like such a talent, was that Todd had was Materiality.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, that was that that comes to mind in terms of, you know, the timetable to a degree. So anyway, these are two really interesting sets of pedigrees. I mean, that can really, I think,
they're hit you in the face pedigrees.
Yeah,
and you know, they were fairly inexpensive horses as yearlings.
Which is encouraging to everybody. And by the way, you know, though he doesn't send horses out in the afternoons, when you're getting a horse from Randy Bradshaw, you're getting, you know, the next gen work of Dwayne Lucas, because Randy,
that's right,
part of that assistant, that murderer's row of assistants with Todd and Kieran and Dallas and Mark Enig and on and on and on. So Randy Bradshaw does a tremendous job. You know, his contribution actually to this probably needs to be fleshed out more, because the fact that it's a pedigree that at a glance wouldn't necessarily produce a win early type, Randy may have tapped into what needed to be tapped into to have him classic trail prepared.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Very, very good. Sid, this was as fun a 45 minutes and as cheerful
absolutely
discussion as
you've given me an opportunity to talk about my son as well. So thank you very much.
Everybody celebrating the good fortune to sign with the pods. And we're looking forward to the next chapters and to the baseball card. I love it. Sid, thanks so much.
Right,
everybody,
you,
we're underway, by the way, we should mention. It is the week that all the stallion barns are opening, and yesterday they wrapped up at Phasic Tipton, day two of the winter mix sale. The mixed and bloodstock sales are over, and after a lackluster, you know, sort of blah Monday, the Tuesday sessions saw some nice numbers and some increase in the trade, picked right up. So time to put away the catalogs for mixed sales and start to look toward the 2-year-old in training sale season. The next onslaught. February, March, April, May, June. February, March, April, May, June. Next 5 months. Yeah. Yep. Unbelievable. Time marches on. Time waits for no man.